example, here to the right panel. So if you notice in the right panel, those of you who may be new to WebEx, in the right panel you'll see the word polling and you'll see a box for that. And I've opened the poll, so if you would take a few minutes here and respond to the question, we'll do a live polling to see what everyone's experience and knowledge is with migration, city migration, I should say. And while you guys are taking the poll, I am going to give you just a brief introduction of the Smart Connected Communities Institute. So we are an online community, and it's a global community. We have over 225 cities represented on the site in 67 countries. And we are engaging thought leaders around the world on urban sustainability and sustainable urban development. And so that includes transportation, healthcare, education, public safety, and just building, planning, and living in a smart city. So a lot of that has to do with information communication technology as well. So if you haven't checked out the community and you're new, please go to smartconnectedcommunities.org and join the collaboration and participate in the community there. To give you just a highlight of what's new on the site, we are looking for bloggers. So if any of you are interested in blogging or you have a blog already, please contact me at jillkiefer@smartconnectedcommunities.org. And we are looking for bloggers for all the industries and you know, any subject matter that has to do with a smart city. So the field is open, so to speak. So please contact me if you're interested. To highlight some of the content that we have hitting on the site, we have new original content. We're going to continue our interviews with industry thought leaders around the world where we're capturing information about smart cities from these thought leaders, and we will continue to post that content up on the site every week. And we also have had a request from our community members to provide some case studies. So as people, you know, are implementing and planning and budgeting, they're looking for examples of other cities and what other cities are doing in the sustainable urban development realm. So we're going to be posting up some case studies, some global case studies this week, and then we will continue to add to that and find additional information for our community members so we can get that to you. Looking ahead, I just want to give you a heads up that we are launching a survey in the next few weeks. We would love for everyone to come and take the survey and give us your feedback. So we're looking, again, at what kind of content you're looking for, what kind of resources you need, and so that we can find that for you and provide it on the online community. And then we're also just going to ask you a few questions on the survey about collaboration tools and what you're using on the site and what you like and what you'd like to see that's not there. So look for that. I'll send out an email to everyone through our newsletter to let you know that that survey is up, and we would love for you to take that. So let's take a look here at our survey, at our poll, and see, it looks like, so the question was, by 2050, what percentage of people will be living in cities? And most people responded 3/4. Looks like, though, we still have some people coming in and responding. So 2/3 is also tied with 3/4. And then we have 1/2 is 1/3, and 1/3 is last. And 2/3 seems to be pulling out here as more people are responding to the poll. And 2/3 is actually correct. And so without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Ivana and get you started on her presentation. She will be diving deeper into city migration and megacities in the future and what this looks like and presenting their research. So without further ado, Ivana, let me turn the presentation over to you, and I'm going to give you control here so that you can move your slides. Okay, so there you go. Welcome, Ivana.
Great. Thanks very much, Jill. I do have control now, so that should be all good. And thanks very much to everyone for attending. I'm really excited to have the opportunity to showcase this work with you today. And in brief, Megacities on the Move is an initiative that Forum for the Future launched last year, and it was done in partnership with Vodafone, the FIA Foundation, which is the foundation associated with the Formula One and the Federation of National Motoring Associations, and Embark, a sustainable transport NGO that works in cities. So it was a rather unique partnership, with each member coming at the issue of mobility from a rather different perspective, which was in many ways one of the core strengths of this work. So Megacities was a scenario planning project that looks at the future challenges and opportunities around mobility in cities, and also how we can prepare today in order to create more sustainable systems for tomorrow. Before I delve into the project in a bit more detail, I thought I'd just start with a few words about Forum for the Future, since I suspect some of you will not have heard of us. So the first thing to say about Forum is that we're a sustainable development NGO, and we're a partnering NGO, not a campaigning NGO. And what that means in practice is that we focus on co-developing practical solutions to sustainability challenges in partnership with business and with government. I'm just going to quickly flash the slide just to show you who our partners are. I think a lot of the names on there will be recognizable to you. Our work with these partners ranges from things like helping Cadbury develop a sustainability strategy to co-developing a new line of eco paint for Akzo Nobel, that sort of stuff. And about a year and a half ago, we came together, as said, with Vodafone, the FIA Foundation, and Embark to collaborate on a challenge that we all think is incredibly important and also incredibly urgent to address. And that is essentially how we can meet the future mobility needs of urban populations in the context of sustainability challenges that we know now we're going to be facing. So, for starters, there's the issue of road safety. The headline here is that around 1.2 million people get killed every year in road accidents, and 50 million injured, so quite an impact. There's also the associated air pollution, associated with fossil fuel-powered vehicles, that is, and this causes some 800,000 premature deaths each year. And, of course, there is the showstopper of all issues, climate change, and transport is an incredibly important flashpoint in the climate change debate because it produces some 20% of global greenhouse gas emissions, with road transport being the largest contributor to that. Now, it's important to remember also that all of these issues are going to be playing out at a time of rapid population growth. So, this is probably a headline that you know, but we're almost 7 billion today, and by 2050, we're going to be about 9 billion. And that growth is not going to be evenly spread out. So most of it is going to be taking place in the developing world, and most of it will be taking place in cities. And congratulations, by the way, on getting that poll question so right. We have 50-odd percent of us already living in cities, and by 2050, that's going to go up to two-thirds. And again, most of that growth taking place in cities of the developing world. So that brings me to a two-pronged set of implications. One is that given the population growth we're going to be seeing in the developing world and the associated economic growth we'll be seeing with that and will likely continue to see as many of these economies join the emerging markets layer, we're effectively driving towards many more vehicles on the road, pardon the pun. And on the other hand, we've got a situation where we've still got most of us actually living in developing countries, and almost half of us living under the official poverty line, which is measured at $2 per day. And that means that most of us continue to be excluded from the global economy in a lot of meaningful ways, including lacking access to mobility. So there will be a huge need to address the mobility needs of the poor who cannot afford car ownership, for example, and will not be able to for some time. So Megacities on the Move, in light of these challenges, is really aiming to help stakeholders involved in delivering mobility to plan for more sustainable mobility systems for the future. Now, the way that we've defined mobility as part of this initiative is as a means of access to the goods and services and information and people that we need in everyday lives, not simply as getting from point A to point B. And the reason that I mention this is that it's incredibly important in how we frame and how we design solutions to mobility. So mobility, so transport is mobility, but mobility can be more than just transport, in other words. So it can be about things like more effective urban design that facilitates easier access to daily needs for citizens, or it can be about accessing things virtually and not actually needing to move, all of that stuff. And the reason I was mentioning that is because it's important to the way the partnership came together. So I was mentioning earlier how all the different partners brought different ingredients to the mobility mix. So obviously Vodafone comes at it from a what can IT bring to the mobility debate. The FIA Foundation is quite focused on fuel technology and innovation. And Embark, obviously, is implementing transport solutions on the ground. Now, Forum for the Future, a lot of what we do is futures related. So scenario planning is something we use quite a lot with partners. And for those of you who are not familiar with it, it's a strategic tool which essentially uses qualitative and quantitative research about future trends in a particular area in order to construct a number of plausible, challenging pathways for the future. And so we chose to use this for Megacities on the Move, because we find that it has a number of strengths, and our work with our partners consistently shows that. So, for example, it's very good at broadening and lengthening strategic planning within organizations. So typically the planning cycle is still short-term and still tends to be quite linear. And so what futures can do is help take into consideration longer time frames and also a multiplicity of possible directions for the future. And that, in turn, is very good at stimulating product and service innovation, and also generally just makes planning processes more robust. So generally, once they adopt a kind of futures approach, organizations tend to be better at spotting and preparing for emerging trends. And also there's a normative component to it that we were also hoping to bring into Megacities on the Move. So scenario planning, in building powerful illustrations of what the future can look like, can also help people come to common understandings about what kinds of goals and solutions they want to be working towards. In other words, what kind of future they want to plan for. And just generally, it's a great tool for sort of helping take debates to another level and bringing in a number of different kinds of stakeholders into the debate. So that was a little bit about the why and the what behind the Megacities initiative. And without any further ado, I will now dive right into the scenarios. And after that, I'm just going to spend a little bit of time talking about the key conclusions that came out of this work. So the first thing to say about scenarios is that they need to be created according to a pre-developed framework. There are a number of different ways that you can do this, one of them being by setting up an axes framework, which is what you see on this slide here. And this framework is constructed using a set of A, highly impactful, and B, highly uncertain factors that will be impacting the issue you're examining in the future. So what our research and the interviews that we did with mobility experts around the world indicated was particularly important for the future of mobility was, on the one hand, the energy mix, so whether our transport will be powered by fossil fuels or alternative energy sources in the future. And so that's the vertical axes you see there. And also the nature of global governance. So whether we will have a tightly governed framework with lots of global agreements and enforcement across a number of issues, or if we will have a more decentralized framework of local solutions and fewer globally binding frameworks. So that was the set of axes along which we constructed our scenarios, and then we used our trends research to extrapolate four distinct pathways for the future, which you can see described here in the context of where they fall on the axes. But I'll also go through each one of them individually. So the first scenario, Planedopolis, as the name suggests, is a world with very tightly planned governance systems. So this is a scenario in which we've not managed to wean ourselves off of fossil fuels. So in order to make things run smoothly and to control carbon emissions, we need to tightly manage everything. There are global binding agreements to address all key issues, be it trade or climate change or resource efficiency, and multinationals are very powerful players in this world as they assist with the delivery of these global targets. As a result, what's happening with personal mobility in cities is that to some degree it's been constrained. A lot of cities, for example, have banned cars in central areas in order to meet very strict carbon targets. Elsewhere, you have cities that are investing heavily in technologies that remove carbon out of the air, such as carbon scrubbers, which in this world are a common sight on a lot of city streets. And also, you have a lot of sophisticated ICT. In this world, ICT really has extensive penetration and wide adoption, and most people would find it difficult to imagine their lives without it. And in part, this is due to governments actively using ICT to deliver services in a more low-impact way. But all in all, virtual city spaces have replaced a big chunk of physical travel, for example. When people do get around physically, they tend to use well-networked and highly controlled public transport systems. This is not to say that cars are not around. They're definitely still around, but in this world, it's hard to justify the cost and the inconvenience when cities have often been so well planned to deliver access by other means. Generally, things run very smoothly in Planedopolis, and access has been massively expanded, but to some degree, this has happened at the expense of personal choice. Now, Renewabad, the next scenario, on the other hand, is a world in which we've turned to alternative energy. It's still a scenario that comes with networked and planned governance systems, but on a different level. So in Renewabad, cities have emerged as very powerful forces on the global stage, and they call the shots on many key issues. And so that's enabled local city-based innovations to come to the fore in the global arena and be replicated around the world. In many of the world's top cities, for example, urban sprawl has been halted and reversed. Urban areas are much more dense, and you have local neighborhood hubs providing integrated services from sort of clean energy microgeneration to vehicle charging networks to flexible working spaces. Personal vehicles are widely used, but they are part of a broader, well-integrated network of public transport systems. And this integration, in part, is facilitated by ICT networks, and it enables people with a wide variety of choice in terms of the kinds of vehicles they use. So people use, but no longer prioritize cars, because it's about whatever gets you there the fastest, whatever gives you the best access to what you need, and preferably in a pleasant and relaxed way. So this is a world in which many people prefer, for example, the ultra-high-speed train networks, which by 2040 are kind of doubling as your office space and your entertainment center and make for a really nice and leisurely journey. Most vehicles in this scenario, needless to say, run on cleaner fuel sources, whether it's about hybrid cars or electric buses or solar-powered scooters. Sprawlville, on the other hand, is, as you can imagine, not a very pleasant world to live in. This scenario, if you recall the axes framework, sits in the top right-hand corner, meaning that it's a world in which we've neither managed to scale up alternative energy, nor have we developed well-coordinated governance systems to help us devise alternative solutions. So as a result, what you have is a car-dominant model persisting, and cars continuing to run on fossil fuels, although we've made major efficiency gains by 2040. You have cities being more congested than ever as a result of this, and the rapid uptake of personal vehicles has in many cities overwhelmed the ability to plan. So in 2040, you have a situation where things are beginning to come to a standstill in many cities. People still desire cars, and personal mobility is very much an aspirational thing, but for practical reasons, they're beginning to return to buses and bicycles because it's simply the cheaper and faster way to get around in this scenario. In terms of urban form, Sprawlville, as the name suggests, has a number of failed developments around the edges of urban centers. These are suburbs that are becoming unviable because it's too difficult to commute from them in this world. And informal transit business solutions are thriving as the private sector increasingly steps in to fill in the gaps in public service provision in this world. People have at times taken to working on the roads in digitally enabled armored vehicles in order to make sure that they get around and that the work gets done. And this is generally a world of kind of wide inequality gaps and simmering resentment. It's almost like a rather unequal equilibrium, an uneven equilibrium in a world that's sort of on the brink of disruptive change, perhaps. And the last scenario, community, perhaps the most challenging, but also the most interesting, I think, is a world in which we've managed to make the switch to clean energy solutions, but we've done that without centralized, tightly coordinated governance systems. So it's a kind of world of backyard laboratories and small-scale innovation, if you will. And this change has not happened overnight, but rather via the local replication of successful and more sustainable solutions in the face of global inaction. Personal mobility is very prized in this world, and you have people moving around in a range of vehicle types, including ultra-small urban pods, souped-up electrified bicycles, scooters, and so on. And customization is also very popular. So you can build your own vehicle using pre-assembled kits, grow your own biofuel sources in your backyard, and even print a lot of goods at home on 3D printers instead of going out to buy them. So it's very much a DIY kind of scenario. Now, the roads are quite chaotic in this world, although by 2040 we have ICT innovations embedded in vehicles that help avoid collisions. But generally, there's a lot of kind of personal vehicles on the road and very little public infrastructure on a citywide level, as people tend to kind of live, work, and play in their local community. So I'm going to stop the scenario descriptions there. Those are quite brief. I would encourage you to read the full versions, which have a little more detail about each of the elements of these four worlds. But should be hopefully quite interesting readings. And also, I should mention that we've created animated films for each of the scenarios, which are kind of really fun, creative, three-minute stories about what the daily commute looks like in each of the scenarios. So I'd encourage you to check all of those out. But in the interest of time, I'm going to move on to the third bit of the presentation, which is where I'd like to just tell you a little bit about the key areas of action that came out as critical for creating more sustainable mobility in the future. So this is based on what the trends research told us, but also what came out of the scenario planning workshops, because once we had created the scenarios, we effectively tested them in two cities, in Mumbai and in Istanbul, where we worked with local audiences on developing local responses to mobility. And so we almost came out with sort of six key solutions or actions areas on the basis of this. And in addition to that, we've we've come across throughout the process of doing this work with a number of kind of innovations that we're already seeing play out on the ground, which we think support the fact that this is where we're headed. So the future may seem difficult to predict, and we certainly, we're not trying to do that with the scenarios, but we do believe that there are key ways in which we can all begin to respond to ensure that we're taking the path we want towards more sustainable mobility. So there are, as said, already quite a lot of urban mobility innovations, as the examples I'm going to show you are going to demonstrate. They might not be mainstream at the moment, but they're all real-world examples, whether they're concepts or fully implemented. And we think that they illustrate, as said, the ways in which we'll have to respond to create more sustainable solutions. So the first one of these is really about creating more integrated mobility systems. So when people travel, they should be able to connect much more smoothly and quickly between different modes of transport. And increasingly, there will also be a need to supplement this physical connectivity with online connectivity. So the ability to check information before and during travel, for example, which will allow people to optimize their journeys and perhaps even substitute a degree of physical movement with virtual access to lifestyle needs. And a couple of interesting innovations in this area. The futuristic looking contraptions on the left-hand side of that slide is called Schwebe. And this is essentially a series of pedal-powered, very aerodynamic capsules that are suspended along rails above the ground. And so these don't take up any additional road or walkway space. And they're integrated in the sense that not only are they an alternative mode of transport, but they would have very positive effects on a city's health system because they increase activity levels, because you essentially have to cycle your way in these capsules from one place to another. And there's also some scope for energy generation there. So if you haven't heard of it already, you'll be hearing more about it because Schwebe's just received $1 million in funding from Google to actually build the first of these transit systems for public use. And the picture on the right-hand side is a concept called CityCar, which has been developed by General Motors and MIT. And it's essentially a set of electric two-seaters that are kind of designed to be used as part of a mobility on demand systems, much like bicycle hire schemes, which are so popular in many cities, except with sort of ultra-small urban vehicles. So if you can imagine it, these would be car hire hubs at key transport nodes like train stations and other points around the city, and you could simply hop off the train, rent this car if and as you need it, drive it to where you need to go, and drop it off at the closest available rack. Now, there's lots of space-saving advantages here as well, because these city cars, you can fit about four of them in a standard parking space. And as said, it's still a concept, but I actually was speaking to GM about this a couple of weeks back, and they're actively shopping it around in different cities. So may very well be that we'll be seeing one of these systems on the ground in the future. The next area of action that came out really strongly, and I've spoken a little bit about this before, but it's really about designing mobility systems that work for the poor. So we've already got some 4 billion people around the world classified as low-income communities. And cities in particular have many low-income communities. Now, this trend is going to increase because, as I've spoken about before, much of the world's future population growth will be occurring in cities of the developing world. So mobility providers are really going to have to work much more actively to ensure that future systems and services work for these segments of the population. A few things going on in this space already. So on the left-hand side there, I know this doesn't look like a mobility product, but trust me, it is. It's a water transport vessel, and it's been designed with IDEO, global design firm, in collaboration with Acumen Fund, which is a nonprofit VC. And essentially, it's designed in such a way that the smooth contours mean that you can easily carry it on your hip, but it also has a wheel kit that allows it to be pulled on the ground. And the reason I feel it's a great mobility solution is because its design makes it very, very accessible and encourages easy water handling and easy water transport, which is a key need for the poor in developing countries. So I think it fits that idea of accessibility very well. And on the right-hand side there is Metro Cable, which is an urban electric cable car system that's in operation in Medellin in Colombia. And it was installed as a complementary transit system to the metro in a way that it links poor hillside neighborhoods directly to the city and the central metro system. So on one hand, it's vastly improved access to conventional public transport for the poor, but also it's actually revitalized some of the poor neighborhoods because now there's a transport system that passes through them. The third one here, going beyond the car, I think that no matter how we fuel our vehicles, it's fair to say that the current growth rates of personal vehicle ownership are simply unsustainable in the future. And so in order to avoid cities becoming further congested and overly car dependent, it's critical that we design urban areas for people and not cars. And what that means is mixed-use neighborhoods with the infrastructure to serve local communities, dense developments that prevent further sprawl, and a very high degree of accessibility and walkability. So the pictures here, the first one, the one on the left-hand side, is a photo of Masdar, which is the new sort of sustainable city being designed in the Gulf. And the reason I've put it there is because I think it illustrates really well a pioneering concept of the city as an organism that's now starting to influence urban design. And according to this concept, cities are quite analogous to complex organisms in terms of the nutrients they take in and the waste flows they expel. And so they should therefore mimic the dynamics of ecosystems in order to be truly sustainable. So for example, with Masdar, some of the key principles that have been integrated into planning include things like total reuse of waste via upcycling, recycling, composting, and energy generation, also the maximization of solar and wind energy collection via passive design, mixed-use developments, green roofs, all that sort of stuff. And in terms of an existing city that's thinking about this stuff, on the right-hand side there is a picture of Vancouver. Now, Vancouver has an integrated travel plan, which I think is a great example of how this type of approach has been applied to mobility. So they've effectively treated the city as a single system and made improvements in a way that recognizes that most daily journeys involve multiple modes of transport. So, for example, they've widened pedestrian crossings, they've also created new cycle lanes on major roads, and they've provided cycle racks on buses, and also made technological improvements like putting in an automated light mass rapid transit system, stuff like that. But just a great example of how a city is thinking about mobility in an integrated way. Switching on to IT networks, so I think, you know, it's fair to say that the transition to more sustainable mobility systems can be massively facilitated by IT networks. And there are two key ways to do this. One is by actually using IT to substitute for physical movement through virtual solutions, but also you can use it to better connect and integrate existing transport systems. So people are becoming a lot more comfortable, for example, accessing services and information and social networks online, and mobility providers are going to need to develop more and more sophisticated, user-centered online platforms which effectively enable urbanites to more easily access everything that they need to maintain or improve their daily quality of life. And then in addition, I think transport systems are going to need to use technology to lessen traffic congestion and also accident risks. So, for example, it's very likely that in the future we'll have interstate highways that feature lanes which are completely controlled by computers. And also in cars, it's also very likely that we'll have fully incorporated ICT solutions so that cars are able to communicate with key communication centers, but also with each other. So this is something that leading organizations are already doing research on and is much more likely to become quite mainstream, actually, by the time we get to 2040. A couple of cool examples of what's happening in this space. Those funny-looking vehicles on the left-hand side, there are collision-free, zero-carbon robot cars designed by Nissan. They're called Eporo, and they're biomimetic. And what that means is that they mimic the behavioral patterns of schools of fish in that they travel together without colliding with each other. So very useful for collision avoidance, low carbon, and also kind of contributes to just generally a more environmentally friendly and jam-free driving environment. And on the right-hand side there is an iPhone application. I can't even quite remember which one this is, but I think that illustrates my point quite nicely, which is that there are just so many augmented reality applications out there where you simply hold up your smartphone and the information on screen augments the real landscape with useful information. So you have WorkSnug, an application that identifies all the Wi-Fi hotspots in your neighborhood, and another one which allows you to explore places to eat or shop in the area, all that sort of stuff. Basically, you name it, there seems to be an app for it nowadays. So just an example of how quickly something has become fairly mainstream and is a great example also of how, you know, ICT helps us kind of facilitate better mobility on a daily basis. Refuel vehicles. So this one might seem quite obvious, but I think it's necessary to cover it off here. And it's about two things, really. So it's about greater fuel efficiency, because I think most experts today agree that we can go much farther on that front. And also it's about actually shifting the way we power our vehicles from petrol to more renewable, low-carbon fuel sources. And one example that's been cited quite frequently in this area is Better Place. So you're very likely to have heard of this already. But just to give you a quick overview, Better Place has been set up to counter a couple of key obstacles to the mass adoption of electric vehicles. The lack of infrastructure, and B, range anxiety. And effectively what it does is it's a battery rental service. So better placed refueling stations would allow you to stop when you ran out of juice and switch your used battery for a fully charged one in just a matter of a few minutes, so you're avoiding the need to spend hours recharging your car. What that means, you don't have to pay to own the battery, and you don't have to stop as frequently during longer journeys. And Better Place is actually already launching commercially in Denmark and in Israel, and it's also formed a number of other partnerships with leading cities around the world. So it's kind of well on its way to being adopted. And the other pictures are just photographs of really snazzy-looking electric cars. And the reason I've put them there is because I just feel, you know, anecdotally even, like 2011 is the year of the electric car. There seem to be just so many more products out there from almost all the leading car manufacturers. And I think that also is relevant in the sense that it will speed up adoption, basically. And last but not least, I think that regardless of any planning or technology, which can do a lot to improve mobility, a lot of our future challenges are actually shaped by people's values and behavior and preferences. So as well as switching from fossil fuel powered cars to more low carbon vehicles or utilizing a new technology altogether, I think we need to think about ways in which mass behavior and social norms can be influenced to get people to think beyond their current patterns of travel and ways of living. In fact, because of increasing urbanization, the most successful cities of the future will be the ones that are very active today in promoting low-carbon, healthier lifestyles. And I think a few great examples of how we're already seeing this play out, there's in particular the kind of shared ownership model for personal vehicles has been a real surprise in that people are used to thinking about private ownership when they think about cars, but shared ownership is of vehicles like Zipcar or Streetcar, all those rental services, are becoming much more acceptable and are actually quite popular in most large cities. And the next generation of this is a thing called Whipcar, which is essentially the world's first peer-to-peer car rental service. So car owners can now rent out their own cars when they aren't using them, and users looking for cars can search for them within their own local neighborhood via an online platform. So it's a really great example of a distributed, flexible system that uses an existing fleet of cars, so you're not adding more cars on the road, and you're not creating any more additional physical infrastructure. And statistics actually show that 90% of the time we are not using our cars. So it's in fact quite an idle asset that could be put to better use. So a really interesting example of how business models are slowly starting to change people's attitudes and perceptions of vehicles and vehicle ownership and what they're for, essentially. And the other thing to mention here is that there are a lot of city-based initiatives that have had varying degrees of success, from sort of congestion charges to no driving days. And one that's been particularly successful is the no driving system in Seoul in Korea, because it's both voluntary and popular. So residents are incentivized to sign up to it because they get benefits like insurance discounts and tax breaks, and you agree to not drive one day a week, and your compliance is monitored via RFID tags, which are attached to your vehicle. And believe it or not, the city benefits from having approximately 10,000 less cars on the road every day as a result of this. So another really great example of how policy is slowly changing the way that we behave in the context of everyday mobility. So I'm going to stop there because I realize I'm slowly running out of time, but hopefully this has given you a bit of a flavor of what Megacities on the Move is about. The only other thing I want to add is that this is a freely available resource. It's been developed with the express purpose of facilitating practical use. So the link on this slide takes you to a website where you can find all the resources, including the scenarios, more detail on the solutions, but also guidance on how to use the scenarios in strategic workshops. So I'd really encourage you to check that out and make use of the scenarios in your own organization if sustainable mobility is something you're thinking about or working on. And, of course, do get in touch if you'd like a little bit more guidance on how you can use the work. We'd be very happy to help. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll turn it over to Jill now.
Okay, great. Excuse me. Thank you, Ivana. That was really interesting to see some of those emerging trends. I have several questions that the attendees have posted in the Q&A window, and just a reminder to the attendees, if you have a question for Ivana, post it in the Q&A window on the right panel, and we will ask her to answer your question. So I have quite a few questions about case studies, just examples or real-world examples, Ivana. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you want to talk about that in general. One specifically was, you know, are there real-world examples of the Communicity?
Well, I think that the thing to say there is that there are real-world examples of all the scenarios, funnily enough, but in a sense that's what makes them robust scenarios, is that all four of them are grounded in research that's kind of happening, grounded in research about trends that are beginning to happen and that we're seeing in the real world. And so there are a few examples that I think speak to Communicity. I think I've even mentioned a few of them there, but I think that, for example, the peer-to-peer car sharing service, WhipCar, is a great example of something that happens on quite a local community level. The other thing to say there is that the report itself actually contains quite a lot more examples. So in the interest of time, I've just pulled out a couple of things. But if you check out that link up on the side right now, you'll be able to see quite a lot more in the way of kind of case studies.
Okay, great. A couple more questions. Another one is, can you comment on the trends you see in lower-income developing countries? I'm thinking specifically of India, where personal vehicles are entirely aspirational now and public transport is shunned as people move up the economic ladder. What progress do you see?
That's a fairly common question, and I think it's a really pertinent one because on the one hand, you're seeing a lot of trends pointing to emerging markets following a very similar path. But on the other hand, I think the key thing to say there is that right now, a lot of cities like, say, Mumbai are at a critical moment in time where actually they still have fairly low rates of motorization and fairly high rates of pedestrian activity. And so it's actually really important that pathway starts to shift today, which is partly what we're advocating with this work and partly why we decided to do it, is because as bad as you might think congestion is on the streets of Mumbai, if you actually look at rates of motorization there, it's still very, very low, you know, something like 150 vehicles to 1,000 people. So I think that there's still a lot of scope for action, particularly as there is a kind of culture of cycling and pedestrian activity in many developing world cities. But also I think that we are seeing a lot more kind of activism. So civil society organizations in India working to promote lower impact mobility and even some planning successes like, they've created these elevated walkways in Mumbai now where, people can kind of continue to take the pedestrian route, but it's just a little bit safer because they're no longer doing that at street levels where they're endangered by the oncoming traffic. So I would say really fair point, and in many ways this is true that we're seeing a lot of evidence of emerging markets continuing along the same pathway that OECD markets took, but it's just worth noting that I think there's still a lot of scope to kind of slow that down and to change the way things are developing now because it's still that kind of critical moment of fairly low motorization rates.
Okay. And another question here. A lot of good examples of mobility. Are you seeing some come out on top in terms of city adoption?
Can you repeat the second part of that question?
Are you seeing some of these examples come out on top in terms of city adoption? So are cities starting to pick some of these mobility examples and adopt them, or are you seeing some kind of rise to the top of being a popular choice for mobility?
Well, I think that for example, a lot of the this is not one of the examples, but a lot of cities have really immensely popular bicycle hire schemes right now, from sort of Copenhagen to Paris to London. And I think that's a great example of, you know, this service being offered to people and people realizing that actually it is by far the best way to get around in many cities. It's quick, it's affordable, it's healthy, it's environmentally friendly. It just really hits that sweet spot. So, you know, I live in London, for example, and the Barclays bikes are hugely popular here. So that's just anecdotally, I am seeing a lot of that. But also I think there's the car rental services are becoming quite popular as well, mainly in large cities, which is where you have them. But I think that's been a real success. And I think also Better Place is, you know, just the fact that Better Place has actually formed partnerships with cities and is beginning to implement electric charging infrastructure, I think is a really positive sign of how we might see electrification actually go to scale.
Okay. And along the terms of bicycles there, what do you see the future of cycling in a city? Do you think it'll continue to grow? And from it sounds like it's you know, of course, very popular in a lot of cities, but will it continue to be so?
Well, I think at the risk of sounding a bit cheesy, I think the future is going to be about choice. So I don't think that any one mode of transport is going to win out, in a sense, and come to predominate. I think what we're going to be seeing a lot more of is just multimodality. So people being offered the choice of different modes, but all these different modes will be integrated in a much better way. So the cities that have not yet integrated cycling into transport, daily transport, will do a lot more of that. I do think that there's a point at which the amount of cycling uptake peaks because it might not be convenient for a certain range of travel or weather-wise or whatnot. There's really a variety of reasons that limit cycling. But I just think that you know, it will become much more prominent than it has been in the past as a kind of viable everyday mode of transport, and it will be integrated with all the other modes, whether that's kind of driving or taking public transport or whatnot. I think it's going to be much more about kind of multimodal transport networks.
Okay. Very good. Well, Ivana, thank you so much for taking the time to present to us today. It was very valuable and interesting, and we did record the session, just so everyone knows. We will put it up on the smartconnectedcommunities.org website, and there'll be a link there with a podcast, so if you want to share it with colleagues or other people, you can forward that link to them. And if you know there's something in here you want to see, you can check out the recording as well. So thank you to everyone who attended today, and if you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact me or Ivana, and we'll continue the collaboration and the dialogue. Ivana,
yes,
thank
absolutely.
You so much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.